Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light, the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Degree of Freedom, was written by Joseph Mindell.
It is no use to complain, horse. I must tether thee. Now. There is enough grass within your reach. Thee may eat grass while I sit here and eat my bread. Now, lest thee think I make too much of the difference between man and horse, I will read aloud so we both may hear. Pennsylvania Gazette, the 16th of July, 1776. No, thee must listen, horse. It tells us great news. Ah, we have company. Good day to you, friend.
Good day. I am sorry to trouble you, but your wagon is in my path.
Though it is, still, thee may ride around it.
With the ditch on one side and the hill on the other? No, I'm afraid you'll have to move it.
But my horse is unhitched.
I'm sorry, my friend.
Tell thee, friend. If thee dismounts, we will move the wagon together.
Well, now, after all...
Or else, being dismounted, thee may sit here with me and share my loaf.
One might almost think you blocked the path for a purpose.
Oh, is it so? Well, how else can a traveling peddler like me have company for dinner? But he has not made a choice.
If you'll allow me to contribute the cold meat I was carrying for my supper.
With pleasure. Sit down, and I will read you the news from the Gazette. A declaration by the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled.
Well, that was in July. Your Gazette must be 2 months old.
It is. In these 2 months, I have traveled through Pennsylvania and Maryland and now Virginia. And I've read it through 36 times.
There. The meat is cut. Will you have some?
Are we like my horse that we should think only of food for the belly? Listen. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thee knows the passage, perhaps?
Yes. Yes, I know the passage.
Well, that is a lukewarm kind of knowing. Does thee not hear the words sing?
They're only words.
They will make us free of the British crown.
It may be so, but I was not thinking of that.
Ask anywhere if Jonathan Hicks ever lacked in courtesy to any man. But I must tell thee I do not like what thee seems to have in mind.
I was thinking, Jonathan Hicks, that George III is not the only obstacle to freedom, and that words are not enough to win it.
Is that what thee thinks? Then thee will listen to every word of the Declaration.
It is not necessary.
This stretches my patience and my charity. Whoever thee may be, and whatever thee is called.
My name is Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson of Monticello.
In the first days of September in 1776, having finished his work in Philadelphia, Thomas Jefferson rode homeward to Virginia. This we know, if it is not recorded that on the way he met a Quaker peddler with a wagon of pins and combs and buttons, nails and nutmeg, socks and shawls and shoelaces. If this is not written down, it does not signify. For all his life, Jefferson loved to talk to people of every kind, nobleman or peasant, soldier, farmer, lawyer, statesman, or a peddler named Jonathan Hicks.
Well, Jonathan, I turn off here. Jonathan!
Whoa.
The left fork will take you to Williamsburg. Perhaps we'll meet there again in a few weeks.
They must not think me presumptuous, Mr. Jefferson, but it is strange to find thee here in Virginia. Surely thee is needed in Congress in Philadelphia.
There's work to be done here. I'm elected to the Virginia legislature that'll soon convene in Williamsburg.
What work can be more important than that of the Congress of all the United States? Yes, he is right not to answer. It is not for me to question.
No, I was thinking how to explain. Jonathan, if you should come to live here in Virginia...
I thank thee for the asking, friend Jefferson. It is a rich green land, but I like Philadelphia best.
And perhaps you are wise. For I must tell you that here, you could not attend your church. Not you, nor a Methodist, nor a Baptist, nor a Presbyterian, nor a member of any other Christian or Jewish denomination.
Is there then no religion in Virginia?
Only the church established by the laws of Virginia. None other.
Fortunately, we Quakers need only a meeting house and someone to lead in prayer.
Your leader could be arrested for preaching without a license.
But if we met together in the privacy of our own houses...
You could all be thrown into prison for disturbing the peace. And if you remained at home and kept your silence...
That would be most difficult.
Then you would be taxed by the state, as all citizens of Virginia are, to support the established church.
Friend Jefferson, I do not believe that in heaven there is a Quaker, nor a Presbyterian, nor a Baptist, nor a Methodist. God does not make such distinctions. It appears that the state of Virginia is more finicky.
Mr. Speaker!
Mr. Pendleton has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I rise to ask for a report from the Committee on Religious Toleration.
Will Mr. Pendleton permit me to make a correction?
It is always instructive to be corrected by my friend, Mr. Jefferson.
You have misnamed the committee of which I am a member, Pendleton. It is not the Committee on Religious Toleration. It is the Committee on Religion.
All right, I acknowledge my error, petty though it is.
It is not a small thing, Mr. Pendleton. I do not believe in toleration.
What?
Nor do I believe this House has the power to legislate it.
Well, we seem to have been mistaken as to your views, Mr. Jefferson.
Toleration is a thing granted by a superior to a lower order. The rights of religious belief are not subject to such distinctions nor to any government. We are answerable for them only to God.
Do I understand you to ask that this committee be dissolved and its work ended?
No. I want you to draft the laws requested by citizens from every part of Virginia in the letters and petitions I hold in my hand.
And why were these petitions addressed to you instead of to the chairman of the committee?
Perhaps, Mr. Pendleton, because with great foresight, you chose the chairman and the majority of the committee from among those who want no change in the present laws. With the permission of the House, I will read some of these letters.
Mr. Speaker, it seems to me that a report of the committee is premature at this point.
It was your own suggestion, sir.
Then I stand corrected a second time, Mr. Jefferson. I think the matter needs discussion of a more informal nature than is possible on the floor of the House.
At the Raleigh Tavern, for example?
Well, why not? It is well known that fewer meetings of the minds take place here than at the Raleigh Tavern.
Landlord! Another pint!
Jefferson, we've been friends for many years. There's no need for us to quarrel.
I have no quarrel with you, Pendleton. Only with your views.
After all, as men of education and substance, we do have certain responsibility.
I'm pleased to hear you say so.
Then tell me, how else but through an established church can we prevent confusion among the ignorant, the careless?
Pendleton, the care of every man's soul belongs to himself, to no one else.
Yes, and you have only to look around you to see how many neglect it.
What of it?
Landlord!
What if a man neglects the care of his health or his property? Will you make a law that he shall not be poor or sick?
But, Jefferson, if only for humanitarian reasons...
Another pipe. Coming, I'm coming. Yes, I'd say.
Let's see how much money you have left.
Don't worry, I'll pay you. I always pay.
That's enough for one more pipe. The last you'll get.
Yes,
Eva. Our landlord. He's had enough, hasn't he?
Aye, sir, that's what I told him. Not another drop will he get after his money's gone.
I was saying, Jefferson...
I remember. Humanitarian reasons, you said. Pendleton, my friend, I'm suspicious of humanitarianism that is concerned only with higher things like the soul.
I've given you no cause to doubt my sincerity.
I do not doubt it. Only how strange it is that no one complains of his neighbor that he mismanages his land, or that he makes a bad marriage for his daughter, or that he drinks away his money in a tavern. But let him not conform to the church.
The church is established by law, and laws must be enforced.
A law may also be changed, and this one must be. Pendleton, I met a man, a peddler from Pennsylvania, who is in Virginia illegally.
Oh, nonsense. There's no legal requirement.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a law 100 years old that forbids Quakers to enter the state under penalty of prison.
Oh, come now, Jefferson. We're not barbarians. Last year, I sat as magistrate in Caroline County. Did you hear that I or anyone else threw Quakers in prison for being Quakers?
Well, you're a good man, my friend.
Well, then you see, your Quaker is safe here.
So long as the magistrates are good men.
Jefferson, I'm surprised at your lack of confidence in the honesty of your fellow citizens.
Pendleton, I do not want Jonathan Hicks to rely for protection on any man's goodwill. The time for setting human rights on a solid legal basis is when the spirit of the government is good and the magistrates are honest.
Oh, I give up. There's no use in further talk. Fortunately, your proposals will be voted down in the legislature.
If so, I'll try again. I'll not give up trying. Oh, excuse me, Pendleton. It's getting dark, my friend. Time to go home.
Ale. I want more ale.
Tell me where you live. I'll take you there.
Let me alone. Not going home. All right.
Well, you go to extremes to instruct me, don't you?
Now, what do you mean, Pendleton?
I'm not a simpleton. You're preaching me a parable through that drunken fool.
Oh, no, no. No, my friend. I'm acting as the scriptures tell me I ought to act toward my neighbor.
Jefferson, you're a landowner, an educated man. You're a gentleman. It does not become you to be so fanatical about religion.
Is that how it seems to you? Pendleton, if I'm fanatical at all, it's about human beings and their inalienable rights.
I have a question for Mr. Jefferson.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Richmond County.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Jefferson, I am a plain man, and I will ask a blunt question. Are you an atheist?
I do not acknowledge your right to ask the question.
The House has the right.
I'll discuss my private opinions if you ask as a friend in private conversation over a glass of port. But my religious beliefs have nothing to do with my public obligation.
Mr. Jefferson, when you were inducted into this legislature, you took an oath as a Christian. Mr. Jefferson, are you an atheist or a perjurer?
Or both? Mr. Speaker, the gentleman from Richmond County goes too far. I want Mr. Jefferson to know that I, for one, separate myself entirely from those remarks.
Thank you, Pendleton.
And yet, Jefferson, a question still remains. Do you deny the government power to regulate the conduct of its citizens?
The legitimate powers of government extend only to those acts that are injurious to others. It does me no injury for my neighbor to say there are 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg.
Your neighbor again. You know, this neighbor of yours gives us a good deal of trouble.
It's no easy thing to make a government of free citizens.
Do you begin by overthrowing existing law?
Does that frighten you?
We were not so timid in July.
That was different. We spoke for freedom there at Philadelphia against the tyranny of King George and the British Parliament.
Hear, hear!
Pendleton, there are many kinds of tyranny, but there is only one degree of freedom.
Do not instruct me this time, Jefferson. I desire freedom as much as you.
For Quakers, for Baptists, for Jews?
Again, you have an inflexible mind.
You have not answered. Freedom from restriction by the Virginia legislature as well as the British Parliament.
Liberty without restriction is anarchy. I wish to conserve what is good in the system we have.
And so do I. But you cannot divide freedom into separate parts, political and private. Pendleton, you cannot make a man partially free.
Then you are against all established custom and law.
Only if they exclude the right to dissent from them.
Jefferson, I am troubled. I'm afraid that you're in danger of becoming a chronic dissenter.
There's no harm in that, so long as I do not insist that you should not be conservative.
Mr. Speaker, I call for a vote on the question.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, it is time. The question may not be settled by this vote or at this sitting of the legislature. But now it is time for us to make the first draft of another declaration.
Is thee hungry again, horse? Well, we'll stop soon. Well, soon, I said, not yet. Thee must not be like a man and argue with those who know better. Does thee not see the grass is greener further on?
Jonathan! Jonathan Hicks!
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Friend Jefferson, it's good to see thee again. I was about to...
You set your trap where the path narrows.
Oh, they can see through me entirely. I have a side of beef. Will they join me?
Not this time, Jonathan. We're not far from Monticello. Tonight, you'll dine with me. I'll not offer you wine, Jonathan. But I hope you'll not be offended if I have a glass of port.
Friend Jefferson, should thee wear a broad-brimmed hat because I am a Quaker?
Ah, Jonathan, I wish that others here in Virginia were as liberally minded.
Thee had no success in Williamsburg.
Well, it's no longer a criminal offense to dissent from the established church, and dissenters will not be taxed for its support. That's something.
It seems to me a great deal.
But there is still an established church. And the state still has the power to regulate religious assemblies. And they proposed a general tax to maintain the ministers of each denomination. Jonathan, if I belong to any sect...
He says if...
Then I must be allowed to contribute voluntarily as a matter of conscience to the support of my church. And if I'm an atheist...
Another if, friend Jefferson?
Then I have the right as a matter of conscience to refuse any contribution.
There is truth and there is error. Does error also have rights?
Consider, Jonathan. There are 1,000,000,000 people on this earth, and they profess 1,000 different systems of religion, of which ours is but one. And even if there is one right religion, and ours is that one, then what?
Then, out of compassion for the 999 wandering sects, we should wish to see them gathered into the fold of truth.
Ah, but how? By coercion?
Oh, he knows I do not believe in force.
Then you must believe with me that reason and persuasion are the only practicable instruments. These cannot operate unless men are free to think and inquire without any hindrance. And therefore, church and state must be entirely separate. This I would maintain if I were a Baptist or atheist or established churchman.
Friend Jefferson, thee has spoken so many ifs, so many imaginary situations that I am confused. I do not know how thee believes, or if thee believes at all.
I was asked the question before, and I refused to answer it.
I do not press thee for an answer, my friend.
Yet can you be my friend, or are yours, if the deepest thoughts are not spoken? Jonathan, I am of a sect by myself, as far as I know. Does that shock you?
I am concerned for thee. I've met other men who said much the same thing. They were men who could agree with nothing and therefore believed in nothing.
Chronic dissenters.
What did they say?
I hope I'm not one of those. Now, Jonathan, I believe that God is good and perfect, but that we have neither words nor ideas adequate to define him.
Well, surely they knows there have been many definitions.
Yes, one by each denomination, and all different, and all ending in controversy and oppression. Now, I believe it's not necessary to define God, only to do his will.
And thee knows what that is?
It's no secret, Jonathan. It's written in the scriptures, the book of Micah. It hath been told thee, O man, what is good, and what the Lord doth require of thee, only to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God.
Tell me, friend Jefferson, is there a place in this individual denomination for another member?
Mr. Speaker! Mr. Speaker, I offer a bill under the title Ordinance of Religious Freedom.
The bill has failed 3 times. How long will you persist, Jefferson?
You know me well, Pendleton. You don't have to ask.
The last 2 legislatures have made great concessions to
you. Not to me. To the people of Virginia.
Well, how much more do you want?
I want everything. I want complete separation of church and state and the removal of every obstacle to free thought.
Free thought for whom? The people of Virginia? The people has a mouth and a belly, but no mind and no thought.
That is how the aristocracy always speaks.
I am not afraid of a word, nor should you be, knowing that aristocracy means excellence.
I am opposed not to the aristocracy of intellect and ability, but to the hereditary aristocracy of Europe and of Virginia landowners.
Yes, and you will talk next of your neighbor at Monticello, the worthy redneck farmer who can neither read nor write.
I will talk of Adam Stone, my neighbor, and of Sir Isaac Newton together. And I will remind this legislature that their degree of talent is no measure of the rights to which both are equally entitled.
An act for establishing religious freedom, passed in the Assembly of Virginia, 1786.
Almost 10 years from the day that Thomas Jefferson rode down from Philadelphia to take his seat in the Virginia legislature, the law for which he worked was passed. He was then 3,000 miles away in France, but the words were those he wrote long ago.
Well aware that Almighty God hath created the mind free, that all attempts to influence it by temporal punishments or burdens tend only to beget habits of hypocrisy and meanness, that our civil rights have no dependence on our religious beliefs more than our opinions in physics or geometry, and finally, that truth is great and will prevail if left to herself.
We, the General Assembly of Virginia, do enact that no man shall be compelled to frequent or support any religious worship whatsoever, nor shall be restrained, molested, or burdened in his body or goods on account of his religious opinions or belief, but that all men shall be free to profess and by argument to maintain their opinions in matters of religion.
My own country has been the first to prove to the world 2 truths, that man can govern himself, and that religious freedom is the most effective measure against religious dissension.
Encircling the walls of the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, these words are inscribed.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
In his long life, he was governor of Virginia, ambassador to France, secretary of state, and twice president of the United States. But he asked as an epitaph those things for which he wished to be remembered.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Now we take great pleasure in presenting Judge Irving R. Kaufman, United States federal judge and a prominent civic and community leader, Judge Kaufman.
The Virginia Statute of Religious Liberty is probably the most famous single document in the history of religious freedom in America. Jefferson characterized the struggle for its enactment as the severest contest in which I have ever been engaged. Today, when the principle of religious freedom is so well established as a cornerstone of our American heritage, it is difficult for us to comprehend the problems confronting those who originally fought for the separation of church and state. It is only when we contrast the American experiment with old world practices that we begin to appreciate its boldness and originality. Historians have debated for decades why religious freedom found the American soil so fertile. Many claim that its development was only a matter of practical necessity. There is an element of truth here, but it is not the whole story. Other historians explain its development as an outgrowth of the revulsion felt toward the old world practices of inquest and suppression. There is an element of truth here also, but there was much more than revulsion involved. Its development was the product of a new view of man and his inherent dignity. Man was to be free. Everyone was to be left to profess freely and openly those principles which are the induction of his own reason and the serious convictions of his own inquiries. This was an immense vision. It was the vision of Jefferson. It is the vision of America. It is a vision unthinkable in a monolithic society, a vision dreaded by all kinds of totalitarian tyrants, but truly indispensable to free men. But more than a vision was required. The ultimate source of the development of religious liberty was in the courage, perseverance, and sacrifice of men like Jefferson, who were not satisfied with the principle alone, but who were willing to fight for it, who were not satisfied with merely tolerating their neighbors' religious practices, but who believed them to be his inalienable right, calling for understanding and respect. This, then, is Jefferson's real message to us. We cannot expect freedom to survive unless we, too, are willing to do more than merely profess our belief in it. Freedom is always unfinished business, and it is always in danger. Each of us must join Jefferson in his immortal oath. I have sworn on the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
Thank you, Judge Kaufman. Our Eternal Light drama today, Degree of Freedom, was written by Joseph Mendel. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Lon Clark as Thomas Jefferson, Everett Sloan as Pendleton, John McGovern as Jonathan Hicks, with John Griggs as Richmond, Bert Cowlin as Speaker, Jock McGregor as the Convivial One, and Roger DeCoven as the Landlord. The narrator, Norman Rose. This is Mel Brandt. Our program was directed by Kenneth McGregor. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.